This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Every friend group has that one person who puts their card down for brunch and sends the Venmo request.
If that's you and your Venmo balance is popping, you need a Venmo debit card so you can spend your balance instantly. No transferring anything, no waiting around.
So as soon as you get paid back for brunch, you can pay for those concert tickets you've been eyeing or put it toward your next night out.
Plus, there's no monthly fee or minimum balance.
Learn more about the Venmo debit card at venmo.com/card. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank, N.A., ID verification required. This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang. We've all been there. You get paid back for dinner and suddenly you have money in your Venmo balance.
With the Venmo debit card, you can spend your Venmo balance instantly. Plus, you can earn up to 5% cash back at some of your favorite brands.
You're earning cash back on things like groceries, rideshare, online shopping. It's giving responsible. It's giving the friend who somehow always has it together.
So if you're that friend who grabs the concert tickets, books the rideshare, and puts their card down at brunch, this one's for you.
Spend your Venmo balance with a Venmo debit card. No monthly fee, no minimum balance.
Learn more about the Venmo debit card at venmo.com/card. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank, N.A. See Venmo stash terms and exclusions at venmo.me/stash terms. Max $100 cash back per month. 5% requires $1,500 in qualifying monthly spend.
Today on the Grave Talks, Haunted Hate. Ghosts and True Crime Tales from Haight-Ashbury and Beyond. A conversation with author Tommy Netzband. The Haight-Ashbury neighborhood in San Francisco is a popular area known for its association with the counterculture of the 1960s. It was the epicenter of the 1967 Summer of Love, when thousands of people flocked to San Francisco to participate in a major demonstration of love, peace, music, and alternative living. But it also has a much darker side. And it also has residents that you can't see. It's ghosts. Ghosts that still remain in the neighborhood's old Victorian homes and hippie hangouts of the 60s. And they have stories to tell. And Tommy Netzband has spent years researching their stories. Today on The Grave Talks, Haunted Hate, a conversation with author Tommy Netzband. I always kind of like to discover somebody's paranormal origin story, if you will. And yours really goes way back to when you were a very small child. And you had an experience that very, very, very few people have. It's in a very exclusive club with having a near-death experience. And you were just a little child.
Yes. I was very young when I drowned in the bathtub as a young child. It's kind of how I got into this crazy line of work, you know, way before it was even popular like it is nowadays. And like most people in this field, you have a paranormal experience, and that's what gets you into this mm-hmm. field. But in mine, it was a near-death experience. You know, my sister, she would take care of me. She's gone now, God rest her soul. In fact, my new dog will be named after her.
I love and, that. His yeah. last dog was named after his mom. So yeah, I think that's very sweet.
But I was in the bathtub. My sister left me alone. I remember I was really tired that night. And next thing I remember, I was on the ceiling looking down at my body underneath the bathtub water. And I wasn't scared, but I was very confused. Why am I up here and why am I down there? And at that moment, I could see my sister's head, because I'm on the ceiling, you know, come into the bathroom and I'm looking at the top of her head. She rushes to the tub. She pulls me out of the water and then I'm back in my body. Okay. And having that out of body experience is what really started me in this field, because ever since that incident, I started to get very attracted to anything that was esoteric. whether it was ghosts, the paranormal, witchcraft, Ouija boards, world religions, things like that, tarot card reading, all of that stuff. And I always had just a great interest in it. And I really was seeking answers of what happens when we die. Do we move on to something else? Does our consciousness live on when this body is gone? And that is kind of how I got into this field. And over the years, I started to get more into the history of ghosts because I'm a history nerd. You know, most ghost hunters are. Mm-hmm. We love history because, you know, ghosts and history, they go hand in hand. It's not enough to just say, oh, this place is haunted. You have to have that history. It makes a much more compelling ghost story. That's sort of how I got into this, you know, and doing history research primarily. But the initial time that I experienced the paranormal was a child. And since then, I've experienced lots of different ghosts, you know. So, yeah, that's kind of how I got into this.
Do you think that having that experience at such a young age kind of opened you up to it as well?
I do. I think it opened me up to it. I think that it made me more open to not having such religious dogma about things, to just being open and understanding that there are other things in this physical reality that we're not seeing.
And another question about the near-death experience, I would think when it would happen to you at such a young age, it would be so confusing. Did you have a conversation with anybody about it, or did you put it all together when you were older? Because as a child, you really wouldn't even have any reference point for what that was.
Well, one thing that I, as a child, learned quickly was death. Because, one, I grew up with panic attacks. And having panic attacks makes you fear death. So as a young child, I always feared death. And also, I had a lot of relatives that passed. So my mother's brother was killed when I was little. So I was exposed to death. I knew what death was, you know, but what the other side was, I had no idea. You know, I mean, I grew up with Christianity, you know, as my focal point. And basically that just is like a, I don't know, that religious dogma just didn't work for me. It just didn't explain it well enough for me. Mm-hmm. It didn't explain what had happened to me as a child. You know, why wasn't I in heaven? Why wasn't I pulled into this white light? You know, why was I just having an out-of-body experience per se? So it just added a lot of questions and it opened me up to just being open. And I think by doing that, it made me more attracted to trying to find the answers. And I'll tell you, I have been studying the paranormal, you know, over 20 years with equipment and history and all of that stuff. And I have so many more questions now than I did before. And really, that is, I think, the important part of this field. Because, you know, Carol, we're in a pseudoscience here. We mm-hmm. know that, you know. I mean, scientists don't look at this field as a very reputable field. But I think with quantum physics, things are starting to change. We're starting to see that there are other physical realities going on. And it's making ghosts become interdimensional instead of just, oh, it's a dead spirit that's trying to venge its past or something. You know, so I think that now with quantum physics, it's added a lot more questions and a lot more quote unquote dimensions to ghost hunting.
Well, and you and I were talking before we started the recording the podcast about our, we both lost dogs. Mine was last year, but you very recently. But you were talking about losing a pet. And when like a dog is part of, I can't explain it as well as you did. I'd never heard this theory before and I loved it. That explain that, please.
Absolutely. Well, you know, as you know, I lost my dog 2 weeks ago. She had dementia. And eventually her quality of life got so terrible that I had to let her down. And it was a gut-wrenching decision.
Oh, yes.
But I did the right thing because she just couldn't eat, you know, couldn't. And I wanted to put her down before she forgot me, you know. Mm. And I didn't want her to be like in any more anxiety and pain. And it was really devastating on me. But, you know, because I'm an esoteric person, I really like to study a lot of different religions, a lot of different spiritual beliefs. You know, I've studied, I grew up Pentecostal. I was a Buddhist for many years. Deepak Chopra is really a guy I admire as well. And there is a gentleman who did a book called The Seat of the Soul. I think his name is Gary Yukov. I should probably look it up, but he did a book called The Seat of the Soul. And he talks about how souls, because we're all really connected, are connected. And to elaborate more on what he's talking about, this theory is that cities are a soul, countries are a soul, the world is a soul. Okay. They're a collective. And in that collective, we are just fragments of this collective soul. And when you look at a dog is one soul. It's called dog. There's one soul that's called cat. And that soul is fragmented like drops of water. You know, and basically the theory is, in his belief, that when you see a dog, and though you've lost your dog, that is a piece of your dog. That is because all dogs are a piece of the same soul. So it gave me a lot of comfort in knowing that, and also gives me a lot of comfort in thinking that, you know, maybe my dog is living on as this collective soul.
I think that's so beautiful. It really touched me in my heart when you said that earlier.
Well, I think it'll hopefully, Carol, make you go out and pet some dogs.
I need that. My cats are like, God, could you leave us alone for a minute?
Okay. You know, there is nothing like a love for an animal. I will tell you, the pain that I have felt losing this dog is like losing a child.
It's deep. It's just deep.
So deep. It's the deepest pain I've ever felt. I mean, even deeper than losing my mother, you know, and really because my mother was sick for many years. And but to lose this dog, the pain was just so much more gut-wrenching. And the fact that I had to decide this dog's fate.
I know. That's the hardest part.
Yeah, that's the hardest part. But I want to believe that my little Judge Judy, that was her name, is out there, you know, in other dogs. And every time I see a dog in the dog park, I'm always like, can I pet your dog? Can I pet your dog? And hopefully I will get another little fragment of Judy real soon.
I think that is so sweet. Well, the book, which is what we're going to talk about today, and I have the feeling you and I could talk about a number of different things for hours.
Yes.
But you've just
be happy to come on as another guest.
Yes,
anytime.
I would love that. But the book is Haunted Hate, Ghost and True Crime Tales from Haight Ashbury and Beyond. So by hate, in case somebody's not looking at the title of this or the show notes, it's Haight. And that's it. The Haight Ashbury neighborhood is in San Francisco. And I thought maybe you could start with kind of a little bit of history. I think the basic thing that most of us think of when we think of that neighborhood is back in the 60s, and there was that kind of hippie culture, and that's kind of, you know, these Janis Joplin lived in the neighborhood, the Grateful Dead, and it had such kind of that love, peace, and drug use is kind of what is in my head. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about the neighborhood?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. It's funny because the very first sentence in my book, in the introduction, is Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, deceased band members of Jefferson Airplane, and the Grateful Dead are not haunting Haight Ashbury, okay? And I'll tell you, as a tour guide, there's these crazy tours that say, see where Janis Joplin haunts the house. It's like, if anybody knows, it's me, because I have been associated with the Haight for 30 years. You know, I moved here in San Francisco in 1996, and I basically fell in love with the neighborhood. A friend of a friend took me in. I had no job, no friends, no apartment, and they just took me in. And I've, you know, been there ever since. I just have such a love and passion for the neighborhood. And it goes way beyond just the hippie stuff, because that is what it's famous for. Mm-hmm. 1967, the summer of love. You know, that is where all that happened. You know, Janis Joplin lived there. Jefferson Airplane owned a house there, the Grateful Dead, the Hell's Angels, you know. But what a lot of people don't understand about the Haight is I love to celebrate the hippiness of the Haight. It's an integral part of the Haight. But the Haight has a much deeper and darker history than people could ever imagine. And that is what my book really delves into. It's the darker side. I think in the book I say the other side of the Haight, you know, because all of us think of Haight-Ashbury and we think of flower children and the summer of love, but we don't realize that there were cult leaders that lived in that neighborhood, like Jim Jones and Charles Manson. And, you know, Charles Manson gathered his family during the summer of love in the Haight-Ashbury. You know, so I really wanted to delve into the darker side of the history and the many ghosts and the hauntings there, because you have to realize that after 1967, Carol, that neighborhood became very, very dangerous. It was not a safe place to live. In fact, if you ever come to San Francisco and you walk the Haight and you go through the side streets, you'll see most of the buildings have these huge gates on them. And those gates were installed in the late 60s because of the crime. You know, there were over 30 murders in the Haight-Ashbury alone in like 1968 or 1969, you know. And now it is just such a gentrified, safe neighborhood. It's got a lot of eclecticness and definitely has its charm. But the dark history of it and the murders and the suicides and the drug overdoses and all of that that went on after the summer of love contributes a lot to the hauntings that go on there.
So when you moved to the neighborhood, when did you decide I could do a walking tour, a ghost walking tour of this neighborhood? You started that quite a while ago.
Yeah, I've done the tour 19 years. It'll be 20 years. And in 2024, it'll be 20 years. I started this in 2004. And it's interesting because I always knew the ghost stories of the neighborhood because that's my interest. You know, I mean, I'm the type of guy that's nosy neighbor. It's like, you know, I'd hear a ghost story and then I'd be like, hey, you know, do you know anybody who experienced this ghost? And I just would naturally, I'm just a curious guy to begin with. So I just naturally sort of just gathered these stories and through the neighborhood, through urban legends, through people telling me this place was haunted, that place was haunted. And then I started to want to look for a team to help me to investigate these places. And I noticed there were no paranormal teams in the city of San Francisco in 2004. So I decided that I would develop a paranormal team. This little light bulb went off and said, hey, maybe this is what this city needs, its own paranormal team. So I developed the San Francisco Ghost Society, which is a free service. We go out, we help people for free. And usually I prove there's no ghost at all, Carol. People need plumbers and electricians more than they need ghost hunters. Oh,
that's okay? Interesting.
So, yeah, and it's okay because I help people sleep at night. I don't mind that, you know. But I really needed like-minded individuals that would be willing to dedicate their time and energy doing this. But if you've ever ghost hunted, I really hate that term, by the way. I prefer ghost fishing because that's really what we're doing. We're more fishing than hunting.
Right.
And, you know, when I like to ghost fish, all right, I think that it's, you know, really important to have a team to help you so that you have different perspectives and different people to experience what you're experiencing. So I created the San Francisco Ghost Society. And then as we started to do cases, I started to notice that, wow, this is a really expensive passion. This passion's costing a lot of money. And people would volunteer their time and energy. And, you know, we'd have to get people together to go through all this evidence. And you'd want to have some Red Bulls and a pizza party and things like that. Or you needed equipment or video editing software, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought, you know what, maybe if I create a tour, Haunted Hate, that we could use this money and I can use it to sort of run the paranormal stuff and also educate people on the paranormal and show them how to ghost hunt. And that is sort of how it was born. And here it is, you know, 19 years later, and I'm still doing it.
That's a really interesting story. So you really started this to fund the other.
Yeah, they really are. They work symbiotically together a lot. You know, one washes the other's hand, so to speak. And, you know, when you, and I don't only deal with the Haight-Ashbury, I've done cases all over San Francisco, the Bay Area, and all of that, you know, but the Haight is my personal love and passion. It's the brand that I've created, you know, and my love for the neighborhood is something that I think people really see on my tour. And they also get to come and experience a real paranormal experience, not just some people that are hiring somebody to say a script and tell you something. You know, we're talking somebody that has investigated these places, has discovered all these stories. These are stories that you do not hear, you know, like when you hear about stories of San Francisco and their hauntings, these are all copywritten original stories that I have researched with 20 years experience with these people. So it really makes the book 20 years in the making. So right. I think that, you know, it's why I'm so excited to finally give this to the world.
That's one thing I really respected about this book and your tour is that this isn't just a story. We all have stories wherever we live that have been handed down, maybe generation to generation, or that kind of whisper game. I can't think what it's called. When I tell you the story, you tell him the story, he tells him the story. And then things kind of evolve and change. These are research stories that you've done the research on.
Yes.
And
I've done the research on. And stories that are like urban legends, like the Woman of Stowe Lake, which is an urban legend that's been told in San Francisco for many, many, many years. You just Google it, it comes up. I myself have spoke of the Woman of Stowe Lake, but I've always had doubts of the story because it's very similar to the Latino story, La Llorona. It is in Mexican folklore and in Latin cultures, you know, Latin America. It's a woman who's lost her children and she's haunting a lake, a river, a pond, and she's seeking her children. Okay. It's called La Llorona. They did a movie about it. It's very famous in the Latino community. Okay. I feel the Woman of Stowe Lake is a quote unquote whitewash cultural appropriation of this Latino legend. And the legend goes that people see this woman at a lake in Golden Gate Park called Stowe Lake, and she's looking for her children that have drowned. Some stories go that she wasn't paying attention to the child and it was in a stroller and the child went into the lake and drowned. Others are she was boating on the lake. They fell in the lake. She drowned. The child drowned. So these are all the stories. Okay. And as a historical researcher, I know that if a woman died in Stowe Lake and her children, it would be in the papers.
Somewhere.
It would have been big, big, big news. Okay. In fact, I know from researching newspapers of San Francisco, in the early 1900s and late 1800s, we were obsessed with death, with suicide. They would list every suicide that went on in the city. Okay. That sold newspapers to say a woman drowned her children. That would have sold so many newspapers, Carol. So why is there no evidence of this ever? So I had to take a step back and think, okay, well, let's talk to people. Have they seen this woman? I've spoken to dozens of people that have experienced this woman of Stowe Lake. So it tells me that, okay, maybe this is true. So then I start researching, has anybody seen a woman with long hair and a white dress or anything? And then I find a newspaper article from like 1908 that talks about these motorists that are, and I printed in the book, they're going through the park and they get pulled over by a police officer for speeding like 10 miles per hour back then. And they basically tell him, oh, we saw a ghost. And they describe the same woman of Stowe Lake that's been told over 100 years. So that game you were talking about, Carol, is called the telephone game.
Yes, yes,
where
that
you
is.
Tell one thing. So why is it 100 years later, the tale's not changed? The woman is described the same way. Okay. So I thought, well, let's do some research. Were there suicides in the park of women? Yes, women did commit suicide. It wasn't their favorite place to kill themselves back then. Women preferred to jump in the bay. And I'm not telling you this just off the top of my head. These are statistics that have been found in these old newspapers. But some women did kill themselves in Golden Gate Park. In fact, the very beginning of the chapter of the book, I list or show the picture of the woman I believe is the real woman of Stowe Lake. And I really want to change the narrative of this story because I think the telephone game, you know, has turned this into a whitewashed tale that's not true. Mm-hmm. But is the ghost true? Absolutely. I believe the ghost is real. And I believe people are seeing this woman. And I give you two examples of two women that I believe could be the candidate and why I believe Mary Hansen, who is in the book, is the candidate of who I believe is the real woman of Stowe Lake.
Would you share her story?
Yeah. It's a tragic tale. It's horrible. She basically was in love with her sister's boyfriend. Okay. And there's hints of the boyfriend flirting with her or possibly even having an affair with her. Okay. And when she came to the conclusion that she would never have him for herself, she decided that she would go to Golden Gate Park and drink poison and kill herself. And that is what she did. So what I understand from my witnesses of the woman of Stowe Lake, many people who see her are couples. Couples like to go to Stowe Lake. It's kind of like a makeout place for couples, you know, it's nice and quiet and the beautiful lake. And people like to go there in romantic tryst, you know. So a lot of witnesses I've talked to have talked about seeing this woman of Stowe Lake. And my theory is possibly that Mary Hansen is either wanting your lover or jealous that you have a lover or is seeking her lover. You know, and I think that she's roams the park seeking this love, which was her sister's boyfriend.
Oh, that's so tragic.
It's a tragic,
it
tragic
really
tale.
It really is.
It is tragic. I mean, I have very tragic tales in this book. And some of them, I'll tell you, I really, really had to think, do I want to publish this stuff? Because, you know, when you do this line of work, Carol, you become very empathic to the subjects. This is more than just, you know, oh, I want to create a tour and just make some fun money. Here's an actor. They're just going to talk to you. That is not what I'm going for. I'm about quality, not quantity. In fact, I only take out like 14 to 16 people on a full tour. I do not go with 30, 40, 50, 60. Like, that's not what I'm trying to do here, you know? And the research that I do on these tours is very personal to me. So the stories that I told, I know that these spirits want their tales told because you're never really dead until you're forgotten. So I want to make sure that these people who suffered at the hands of these horrific, you know, suicides and crimes, that their stories are told. And that is why I published this book.
That's what makes it really interesting to me, because you could, excuse me, you know, here's a home and apparently it's haunted. And rather than just say, well, here's what they've told me, you've gone in and researched. Here's who it possibly could be. That to me makes it really interesting that these were at one point real people who could be haunting. And this makes some sense. That's why I always think the history really explains the haunting so often. If you're able to find that connection, and you've done a really good job with that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really funny. I look back and I think, because, you know, some of these are still a mystery to me. You know, I'm still trying to seek out information on a couple of these tales, but I'm very honest about that. And I tell people, you know, what I find, what I'm still looking for, and so forth. But it was funny because when I created this tour 19 years ago, I would have people come on the tour and I'd have them do a survey and I'd say, well, what do you like about the tour? What do you want more of? What do you want less of? And everybody would say, I want more ghosts. And I'd have to tell them, well, I can't make them up.
Right.
Okay. They have to be real. And they would say, oh, just too much true crime. And now, 20 years later, everybody so wants the true crime too. And, you know, the true crime and ghosts, they go hand in hand as well. Because if you can find the tale of the ghost, most likely there's some true crime tale involved in it. That happens a lot, like you, with these stories in my book, you know, hearing these ghosts. And I think that I really wanted this book to be part like personal memoir of my ghost adventures here in San Francisco and Haight-Ashbury, and part sort of supernatural essay, which discussed theories of ghosts, different ways of looking at hauntings, you know, my beliefs of what I think may be going on, you know. So I really wanted to make the book be a little bit of everything for people.
Well, that's what I enjoy. Like, there's at one point in the book, you were talking about the ghost of a little girl at Columbarium. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, yes.
Which is
yes.
I had to look it up. It's an incredible looking building. It's beautiful. I did a little dive on the building just because I was so fascinated. But in the story, you know, you're able to kind of say it could be this girl. And then there's people who have heard her. And it's like, you can listen to this EVP on the San Francisco Ghost Society's page. You've got the QR code and there it is.
Yeah, I really, Carol, wanted people to go outside of the book so that they could, you know, continue the adventure. And it's fun to say, oh, we caught an EVP that said this, or we used this equipment. But it's also nice to see or hear, you know, the evidence. And I wanted to make sure that people got to hear chilling that EVP. Mm-hmm. It's so clear. And I do believe Viola von Staten haunts the Columbarium. And it was a real pleasure knowing the gentleman that witnessed her, Emmett. He's now retired. He used to make me keep his stories a secret. He didn't want me telling all his ghost stories. So he allowed me to do this, talk about the little girl, because she is my favorite story there. All that evidence just piles up. The picture, where he saw her, the urn. I mean, I even put her picture in the book. You see,
she was adorable. Adorable 6-year-old
girl. Beautiful little girl. The only thing I wasn't able to verify was, did she die from poisoned, contaminated water after the earthquake? But knowing that Emmett had all those other facts and all those facts checked out, I'm pretty confident he's probably telling the truth, you know, and the relative who gave him that picture was a descendant, you know, a relative of hers. That's his picture that he keeps on his desk, or did when he was there. So, yeah, very fascinating story. And Emmett is one of those characters that is very well known here in San Francisco. I wanted to share his tale.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about haunted Haight, ghosts, and true crime tales from Haight to Ashbury and beyond with author Tommy Netzband. You can get the book through Amazon or get more information about the book and the Haunted Hate Ghost Hunting Tour and Haunted Hate Pub Crawl at their website, hauntedhate.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts, and you can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. You'll also find everything there, also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.
This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
We've all been there. You get paid back for dinner and suddenly you have money in your Venmo balance.
With the Venmo debit card, you can spend your Venmo balance instantly. Plus, you can earn up to 5% cash back at some of your favorite brands.
You're earning cash back on things like groceries, rideshare, online shopping. It's giving responsible. It's giving the friend who somehow always has it together.
So if you're that friend who grabs the concert tickets, books the rideshare, and puts their card down at brunch, this one's for you.
Spend your Venmo balance with a Venmo debit card. No monthly fee, no minimum balance.
Learn more about the Venmo debit card at venmo.com/card. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. See Venmo stash terms and exclusions at venmo.me/stash terms. Max $100 cash back per month. 5% requires $1,500 in qualifying monthly spend.
This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
We've all been there. You get paid back for dinner and suddenly you have money in your Venmo balance.
With the Venmo debit card, you can spend your Venmo balance instantly. Plus, you can earn up to 5% cash back at some of your favorite brands.
You're earning cash back on things like groceries, rideshare, online shopping. It's giving responsible. It's giving the friend who somehow always has it together.
So if you're that friend who grabs the concert tickets, books the rideshare, and puts their card down at brunch, this one's for you.
Spend your Venmo balance with a Venmo debit card. No monthly fee, no minimum balance.
Learn more about the Venmo debit card at venmo.com/card. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. See Venmo stash terms and exclusions at venmo.me/stash terms. Max $100 cash back per month. 5% requires $1,500 in qualifying monthly spend.
This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
We've all been there. You get paid back for dinner and suddenly you have money in your Venmo balance.
With the Venmo debit card, you can spend your Venmo balance instantly. Plus, you can earn up to 5% cash back at some of your favorite brands.
You're earning cash back on things like groceries, rideshare, online shopping. It's giving responsible. It's giving the friend who somehow always has it together.
So if you're that friend who grabs the concert tickets, books the rideshare, and puts their card down at brunch, this one's for you.
Spend your Venmo balance with a Venmo debit card. No monthly fee, no minimum balance.
Learn more about the Venmo debit card at venmo.com/card. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. See Venmo stash terms and exclusions at venmo.me/stash terms. Max $100 cash back per month. 5% requires $1,500 in qualifying monthly spend.
This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
We've all been there. You get paid back for dinner and suddenly you have money in your Venmo balance.
With the Venmo debit card, you can spend your Venmo balance instantly. Plus, you can earn up to 5% cash back at some of your favorite brands.
You're earning cash back on things like groceries, rideshare, online shopping. It's giving responsible. It's giving the friend who somehow always has it together.
So if you're that friend who grabs the concert tickets, books the rideshare, and puts their card down at brunch, this one's for you.
Spend your Venmo balance with a Venmo debit card. No monthly fee, no minimum balance.
Learn more about the Venmo debit card at venmo.com/card. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. See Venmo stash terms and exclusions at venmo.me/stash terms. Max $100 cash back per month. 5% requires $1,500 in qualifying monthly spend.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
We've all been there. You get paid back for dinner and suddenly you have money in your Venmo balance.
With the Venmo debit card, you can spend your Venmo balance instantly. Plus, you can earn up to 5% cash back at some of your favorite brands.
You're earning cash back on things like groceries, rideshare, online shopping. It's giving responsible. It's giving the friend who somehow always has it together.
So if you're that friend who grabs the concert tickets, books the rideshare, and puts their card down at brunch, this one's for you.
Spend your Venmo balance with a Venmo debit card. No monthly fee, no minimum balance.
Learn more about the Venmo debit card at venmo.com/card. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. See Venmo stash terms and exclusions at venmo.me/stash terms. Max $100 cash back per month. 5% requires $1,500 in qualifying monthly spend.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
We've all been there. You get paid back for dinner and suddenly you have money in your Venmo balance.
With the Venmo debit card, you can spend your Venmo balance instantly. Plus, you can earn up to 5% cash back at some of your favorite brands.
You're earning cash back on things like groceries, rideshare, online shopping. It's giving responsible. It's giving the friend who somehow always has it together.
So if you're that friend who grabs the concert tickets, books the rideshare, and puts their card down at brunch, this one's for you.
Spend your Venmo balance with a Venmo debit card. No monthly fee, no minimum balance.
Learn more about the Venmo debit card at venmo.com/card. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. See Venmo stash terms and exclusions at venmo.me/stash terms. Max $100 cash back per month. 5% requires $1,500 in qualifying monthly spend.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
We've all been there. You get paid back for dinner and suddenly you have money in your Venmo balance.
With the Venmo debit card, you can spend your Venmo balance instantly. Plus, you can earn up to 5% cash back at some of your favorite brands.
You're earning cash back on things like groceries, rideshare, online shopping. It's giving responsible. It's giving the friend who somehow always has it together.
So if you're that friend who grabs the concert tickets, books the rideshare, and puts their card down at brunch, this one's for you.
Spend your Venmo balance with a Venmo debit card. No monthly fee, no minimum balance.
Learn more about the Venmo debit card at venmo.com/card. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. See Venmo stash terms and exclusions at venmo.me/stash terms. Max $100 cash back per month. 5% requires $1,500 in qualifying monthly spend.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
We've all been there. You get paid back for dinner and suddenly you have money in your Venmo balance.
With the Venmo debit card, you can spend your Venmo balance instantly. Plus, you can earn up to 5% cash back at some of your favorite brands.
You're earning cash back on things like groceries, rideshare, online shopping. It's giving responsible. It's giving the friend who somehow always has it together.
So if you're that friend who grabs the concert tickets, books the rideshare, and puts their card down at brunch, this one's for you.
Spend your Venmo balance with a Venmo debit card. No monthly fee, no minimum balance.
Learn more about the Venmo debit card at venmo.com/card. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. See Venmo stash terms and exclusions at venmo.me/stash terms. Max $100 cash back per month. 5% requires $1,500 in qualifying monthly spend.